SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM, 201 Sports Zone, 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well. SteveBeck.com, Monday after a eventful, how about that, eventful, there you go. That's as useful a description. Probably as we could come up with. A very eventful holiday weekend. Left you at noon on Friday, and so many different things to capture our interest and to excite and to confound as well. And we'll wade into it. There's a lot to digest, and that includes grade one win for Brad Cox, a guy that came into the year with no grade ones, and at this point has seven on the year. And of course, Brad last week with his 1,000th win, and he was sick. It actually turns out to be convenient, so we'll talk to Brad Cox today because Leah Frick's thrilling win. And that was Bravazo, really game. And he's been game all year. And he's been able to snap back from off efforts and takes a licking and keeps on ticking. That was exciting, the Clark and the one grade one from the weekend. The Churchill season came to a close yesterday, and as we had previewed with Marty and James Scully as well, the two-year-old card on Saturday was so compelling and so much fun. The Stars of Tomorrow, too, highlighted by the two graded stakes and then dotted with any number of allowances and maidens, and it's always a race day that is going to have some trickle-down effect and lasting impact as we go forward. And the two winners and the two races were both really good. And frankly, I'll say straight out, so appreciative of Wayne Catalano and Brendan Walsh in particular when it came to all the information they offered on their horses, who both ran huge, and who I know a number of people did well with. Of course, the filly Leora that we'd been tracking in here ever since brought her up with Wayne back in the end of the summer, early fall, and she was just indomitable. And you know, I thought she made great sense. She had stepped forward when she went two turns, and there wasn't a lot of speed. There didn't figure to be a lot of pace pressure in that spot in the Goldenrod, and she games it out and wins the Goldenrod at a a bonus mutual, as I sometimes will say. And then, of course, in the boys' race, Signal Man, who has been plucky and has been in the shadow of a couple of bigger winners in the two-year-old scene, he gets his big win and stays the course down the lane, while Plus Que Parfait was, I thought, running a winning race in the middle of the track, and just one of those wide spreads from the rail out to the middle of the track. And Kenny McPeak, with the General Quarters' son, Signal Man, And he's had a very good campaign. And frankly, this was a, there was any number of horses that came out of Breeders' Cup this weekend and ran well. Quite a few. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We'll get to some other ones as well. But Churchill was certainly the focus, and that included what became just a yet another jackpot pick six source of frustration and anger and just eye rolling. There's no other way. I don't know how many of these we have to deal with, but you know, the nature of this bet with the single winner and with the building jackpot, money kept out of circulation for the game. I mean, I've voiced this any number of times. To me, not only is it just a bad concept day in, day out, but when it provides this kind of circumstance where a DQ takes a six-figure, a $300,000-plus win out of somebody's pocket, yeah, it's one thing. You know, there's going to be disqualifications that are blatant and obvious and demand action, and then there's those that are iffy and run the gamut from 50-50 calls that are arguable, 60-40, 40-60. Those are tough. Think Elate and Abel Tasman. It's the ones where it's pretty clear in most people's minds that there should or shouldn't be a call. And this was a three-horse circumstance at the wire, approaching the wire down the stretch, where there were three possible outcomes. There were three. One was to leave the winner up and move the runner-up behind the third-place finisher. The other was a double DQ, which is the way it happened, and the other was, I guess to leave it alone. But end up taking the winner down and elevating the third-place finisher because of the double DQ, which allowed another day carryover. Now, of course, it got hit on Saturday for $500,000. But being put in this position, to me, is just one more side effect of a negative wager concept. But the thing has taken root, and there it is. It doesn't seem like it's going away. But this is about there's been a not just necessarily just DQs, but there's also been some crazy things happen. The one where who fell off at Gulfstream once, and there's been, you know, one wacky confluence after another. The one about this that I don't think anybody is going to argue super strenuously that the call wasn't, the taking down of the eight, the double portion of the disqualification, was necessary. Nobody's going to say that was absolutely a clear, you know, a clear foul that demanded being taken down. It didn't seem to be. It seemed to me that it was, you know, in the 20-80 range. But a lot of it has to do with the maintaining of paths in Kentucky. So from that standpoint, you want to say it's a bad call, and my God, what a tough break this is for whoever, you know, was on the winning end. But the suggestion that the stewards are working in concert with the racetrack and that they Machiavellian antics to carry the jackpot to, you know, to Sunday for a big multi-million dollar. People have to, number one, understand all the stewards up in the stand, they don't work for the racetrack. One represents the racetrack. The other two are with the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. And the idea that Barbara Borden and Butch Beecraft are somehow under the influence of that somebody, a Churchill executive, called upstairs and said, "Oh, try to take them both down." Are you? If you believe that, then I don't know what to say to you. There's nothing anybody could say except, okay, if you think that, I good luck to you in life, because that means that you see spooks and shadows and conspiracy in every single walk of life. But frankly, it's an incredible affront to people that have worked, particularly when you're thinking, if you're thinking just the KHRC stewards. Butch Beecraft and Barbara Borden have long and respected careers. So I think it's actually pretty insulting to them to think that somehow they're beholden or under the influence of racetrack management, that they're going to compromise their integrity and careers in that realm. To me, you can draw the line at, boy, that's a call that is tough to stomach. I mean, that part and that we get Monday through Sunday. I mean, there's calls that make you wince, and you just, you know, we discuss them. I mean, how many of these a year do we rehash afterward? But the glaring spotlight that these jackpot wagers create is frankly an unnecessary, added burden. And to me, they're completely counterproductive in their execution, period. So just reiterate that one more time. I don't know what else. I found the aftermath of this thing into Saturday amazing. But frankly, given given the day-to-day headlines, I guess I shouldn't expect or shouldn't be surprised that that people are eager to believe crazy suggestions like that. So we can, I'm sure it'll come up and we'll look at it from other angles. Tons of results and performances to digest. We also have to mention here, among the headlines from the past 72 hours, the passing of Bob McNair. McNair, of course, had a decade of success, he and his wife Janice, before the Houston Texans, got up and running. McNair came into the racing game, and with the help of John Adger, had as much success as any stable you could think of in the past, I don't know, 50 years maybe. The aughts were unbelievable for Stoner's side and left a lasting impression because there's so many mares, fillies and mares, that they campaigned that are going to leave a lasting presence in the game, including, you know, midshipmen. Everybody, you know, you think about Godolphin, but started with Stoner's side. We'll talk more about McNair. There'll be plenty of people to bring forward. Let's take a break. We're getting going. Brad Cox, Tom Proctor, Kenny McPeak, and much more.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Monday after a big holiday weekend. Hope everybody had a terrific Thanksgiving and aftermath. And, of course, it's funny. I talked to John Parada. When did I talk to John? Was it yesterday or Saturday night? I've lost these days kind of meld together. And they were having a Sunday Thanksgiving. So it's funny. I think, I know some people that did Friday as well. So it's not just Thursday. It's really the greatest. As Johnny opines, and we'll talk to John at the top of the hour, there's nothing like it, the 4 days. It's no matter what you want to do, whether you went shopping or whether Tina did Christmas tree stuff yesterday, and it just has so many nice elements to it. The younger son came home from the city, his girlfriend, and spent a good 3 days. It's just great. And then there's the horseplay, which was excellent. A couple of notes, actually, about some things happening. One thing particular happening today, 5 to 7 this afternoon, or this evening, at the Belmont Cafe. A reminder that the memorial for Rick Violette will take place. And a nice quiet day and opportunity for everybody after the big weekend, and hopefully before. I hope a lot of horsemen are able to attend that are, that haven't headed out of town in some cases. 5 to 7 today at the cafe. And I had mentioned, a few weeks ago, if you, and I guess tomorrow you got the Giving Tuesday concept, you can donate in Rick's memory to the best team, the Backstretch Employee Service Team, or to the wonderful Second Career program in New York, Take Two, that Andy Belfiore and Rick created. That was a outgrowth, that program. For those that say, "Oh, nothing ever comes of any," that was an outgrowth of the Task Force on Retirement in New York. Five, six years ago. And Take Two came together quickly, like so many things that Rick Violette committed to, and he and Andy Belfiore worked so well together, put together the Take Two. And I remember they had the launch at the museum, at the Hall of Fame, and it's taken its place immediately among the top retirement programs around the country. And of course, so many of them have really funneled now into the retired racehorse training project, the makeover. Stuart Pittman, who it's funny, I'm mentioning Stuart. Stuart, since the election, he's involved in the transition team, and I can tell he's excited, but it's also, from day to day, he's been sending out on Facebook, he's been sending out updates of the work, and I get the sense that he's like, okay, this is going to be a big job, but there was never any question, right, about that. I love it. A few other pieces of news. I mentioned Bob McNair. We'll maybe, I don't know, maybe, well, there's so many trainers that he used that we could get to. Bob Baffert, obviously, and Todd Pletcher. Ron McAnally and who else had, well, Bobby Frankel did. Bobby won a couple of stakes for them, and they spread their horses around, but Baffert and Pletcher were the linchpins to the success. And, you know, there was a horse, Todd had a Stoner Side, kind of a B. I guess she was kind of a B level filly for them. But they actually had a Fast Cookie was one of my Bill Mott. There you go, Bill Mott, another of the names of the Stoner Side successes. But Fast Cookie was one of my absolute favorites, and of course, it's gone on to be the Dam of Frosted. But Todd had a filly that I ran. I was at Monmouth, and you know what? It must have been when Chuck was at Monmouth, and I saw a filly getting a bath, and it kind of caught my eye. I walked over, and she was so gorgeous and so engaging. And I became an instant fan. Sea Chanter. And she was okay. I mean, I think she won a stake maybe or two. She was a war chant. And I'm not sure about what she's done as a broodmare, but, she was a Stoner Side, homebred and, their story is amazing. I mean, how much success so quickly Stoner Side, the McNairs, fashioned. So we will do justice to the memory of Bob McNair. And it was too bad what he basically said was that, you know, when he sold out to Darley Godolphin. He said, I owe the people of Houston and the Texans all my attention. And, you know, there wasn't anything that Bob McNair got involved in that he wasn't successful. He came to racing and, you know, burned a bright path, and left a lasting mark. That's for sure. I mentioned Midshipman, and it was notable to me. I said this on Twitter that on Saturday when he passed, Midshipman got Princess Warrior. We'll talk to Kenny McPeak today, and Kenny sent out Princess Warrior to the upset in the Mrs. Revere, as it happens. So they're you know, you look around and you'd be amazed that, and I'm sure some people forgot that Midshipman started with the. As a Stoner Side before being sold. So I think he ran for Godolphin or Darley. Did he run in blue or did he run in the maroon in the Breeders' Cup? I'll have to look at that. Can't remember. Anyway, speaking of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, the future books, the first round closed yesterday at 6 at 6:30. The sire wager and the future wager, and as always early on here, the first few rounds of the future wager, the all others gets the nod. 6-5 close among individual betting interests. And as I should note, that's the all other Colts and Geldings, the all 3-year-old fillies, 66-1. So a couple people just dabbled with the fillies, the idea that maybe a filly wins, and if there's going to be a filly that makes it to the Derby, you got to figure, you know, she's got to do it on the boys' side, so. She's got to be pretty good. She's going to be less than 66-1, right? If there is one that gets there. The individual betting interest, 5-1 on Game Winner. And Game Winner, the only individual betting interest in single digits. Had opened at 8-1 and goes off at 5-1. And then Coliseum, and of course, there were, as we said, there were seven Baffert's on this list. And Coliseum closed at 10-1, as did Instagram. And, you know, it's interesting that Instagram was 10-1 morning line and closed at 10-1. And he's, you know, he's out of sight. The decision by Larry Best, basically, to, you know, to rest him up and wait for his three-year-old year. And I kind of thought that that might, you know, work slightly, not against him, but that it might allow for his price to maybe float up a little bit. But it really didn't. Then the other two individuals that were in single digits, Improbable, 17-1, and Code of Honor, 18-1. After that, it careened up into big numbers. Maximus, I give a couple people. Maximus Mischief, 26-1, opened at 30-1, and obviously took a little smattering, and we'll know more after the Remsen, obviously, Butchie Reed. And who else? Signalman. This is interesting. Signalman was 30-1, having run. And that may prove to be a nice number. Uncle Benny, 53-1, we talked about. Vekoma, 36-1. And he's going to wait. He's not going to run in the Remsen. Everything else was, you know, were big. And then on the other side, you know, there's one, Mucho Gusto, who won for which stake was it that he just won last week, down at Del Mar, the Bob Hope. Mucho Gusto. He went. That's a nice price, 47-1. And then on the sire side, all other sires, 9-2, Tappet 6-1, Into Mischief 7-1, Candy Ride 7-1. The value here, I thought, was Quality Road, 20-1. Very nice, 20-1 on Quality Road, who's got a nice smattering of soon-to-be three-year-olds. City Zip. How about City Zip with his last crop? 17-1. And Curlin, 13-1 in here. Medaglia d'Oro, 21-1. Uncle Mo, 23-1. So the sire, that's the one pass you had at the sire wager. Last year, that was the Scat Daddy paid a nice number. A couple of other notes before we go to the break and bring in Brad Cox. The RMTC conversation you might have heard on the replay with Dr. Benson. It's underway, and I'll send the link. The link didn't go live until early afternoon on Friday, and I haven't sent the link out, but I will. So you can peruse those halters, and we'll remind you of that as the week goes by. And finally, on the news front and combo news and wagering, and we'll talk about it with Johnny, the Stronach Pick 5 carried over on Friday. And I think it's funny. I thought maybe it would get lost in the shuffle, but yet it's an $88,000 carryover. So the handle was up significantly on Friday. And I think that's just the benefit of having, you know, a lot of people not working and getting a chance to play. It took plenty of action, but this proved out to be a murderous sequence. 25.80 in that Laurel Eighth, Papacho, Heaven's Humor, $11 in the Gulfstream West Eighth. Then a square, you know, a reasonable price, $640 in the Laurel Ninth, Fashion Faux Pas, and then back at Gulfstream West, Armonico, $22.20. And finally, the fifth at Gulfstream at the Golden Gate, $17.40. So nobody could negotiate that, and that's not surprising. That's a brutal sequence. So $88,000 between the carryover and the 12% takeout on this Friday, there will probably be a very nice positive expectation opportunity on the Stronach 5 carryover that'll run on Friday, the 30th. So there you go. Let's take bottom of the hour break, a little past, and when we come back, Brad Cox. Got to get Brad in here, talk about win number 1,000 and getting a grade one for Leah Frick, Steve Landers. How about who else? He won that abbreviated group in the Discovery, too, Plainsman. That was a bit of a chess match, that race. There were a couple of those over the weekend. Yesterday, as well, at Del Mar, you scratched down in the Native Diver to 3, and they were kind of sparring. Battle of Midway, if you didn't see it, Battle of Midway and Dabster, they were shoulder to shoulder for, I don't know, 7/8. That was really fun, actually. For a 3-horse race, there was a little bit of Rydan and Jaipur. Lots of other, so much to wade through here. By the way, speaking of spectacles, did you see the Japan Cup? Dig up the Japan Cup from yesterday. The filly, Almond Eye, they're going to point for the arc, and that sets up a filly tete-a-tete with an able. Almond Eye, I thought that was a spectacular effort in the mile and a half Japan Cup. She's a serious horse. Almond Eye, it was cool. Go watch that replay. Let's take a break here. Brad Cox gets us going. Later, Proctor and McPeak and Johnny and Catman and more. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Johnny D will join us. And right now, Brad Cox. And I'm glad that Brad was sick last week. I don't mean I was, you know, I'm glad you were sick. I'm glad you were, your voice was too impaired to visit, because there's more to talk about than there would have been last week. Because I think you probably already put the 1,000 wins behind you. Good morning. Congratulations on a great weekend.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. We'll go back to last week for starters before we talk about Leah Frick and getting a grade one for Steve Landers. The 1,000 wins, and fold Mr. Misunderstood in there, and his win. It feels like it happened in 2 seconds, but it didn't. It happened. It took a lot of work went into those 1,000 wins.
Yeah, no doubt, and I guess, like you said, it seemed like it did happen quick, but, you know, we have been in business since 2005, so it took a while, and it takes a while to get going in this business, and but it was good. It was a good accomplishment, and it was, you know, team effort and a lot of people behind it that made it happen.
Talk about that, you know, the elements that go into, you know, establishing yourself and gaining confidence, gaining clients, attracting owners, the portions of this, Brad, that, you know, that we don't see all that often. And, you know, there's a lot of young horsemen that, you know, that make the move and go out on their own, and is not everybody succeeds. I mean, talk about what you feel has been instrumental in getting established and then having the kind of success you've enjoyed.
I guess probably the biggest thing with, you know, being able to win races is, you know, just being competitive. I mean, you're not going to win all the time, but you got to put yourself in the best position in order to do that. And that comes a lot with, you know, it just comes down to being, you know, trying to do right by the horse and running them in the proper spot and, you know, taking care of them. And, you know, when you get so many horses in it, you start relying on help a lot. So you have to have great help in place. And so, like, we have that. And, you know, it comes down to owners as well, allowing you to run horses where they can compete. And there's a lot of things that go into it. You know, those are just some of the probably, very important things that go into to get into the winner's circle.
When it comes to setting up satellite training operations, and as you say, having personnel. I mean, when you're in Kentucky and you got horses in New York, and when the, you know, season is going to get started in fairgrounds, and you send, you know, the group down there, you know, ahead of the closing of Churchill. How do you train assistants and basically give them your eyes and your comprehension of what they're watching for? Because basically, you know, that's the challenge of getting multiple strings is having everybody on the same page, and you know, you have to rely on their view of things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you know when you're not there, you know what they tell you is kind of what you got to go by, and you know, I feel very, very fortunate with the people we have in place, because you know, when they tell me one, you know, obviously if there's an issue, there is an issue, but if one's doing really well and happy with the way one's training and we're entering it, you know, lots of times they show up and run the way they were training. So, you know, you got to rely on them and lean on them, and you know, all these guys we have been assistants other places and, you know, for successful stables, so it's worked out real well, and they've got great backgrounds and you know, great horsemen.
When you have to, after training hours are over, give everybody a snapshot of your day, because you must talk to each foreman multiple times a day.
Yeah, and it varies, you know, with racing, just depending on where the racing is. But, you know, I try to touch base with every assistant. You know, and there's some dialogue throughout the morning through text or quick calls during training. But, you know, try to sit down and go through each division with each assistant. And then actually right before that, I'll do entries, make my entries, whatever track we're entering at, and then sit down and, you know, try to get a hold of each assistant, run through every horse, and try, more or less just kind of get a rundown of what took place that day, and then get a plan for tomorrow and go over the entries with the assistant at that track we're entering, if we're entering that day. So I feel like it's very organized. It seems organized to me. It may not be organized to everyone, but I feel like we got a good line on what's going on.
And I remember at some point we were talking about, you know, you expanding and you know where you had, you know, what juncture you were at. And I remember you saying that you phone in all your own entries. And I remember I was astounded by that, just by, you know, by the sheer number, I mean, that's involved. And of course, yeah, there are, not that there's anything, you know, everybody does it their own way, but I mean, there's some with office managers that are, you know, basically, you know, collating all that kind of thing. So for you to be calling all the racing offices, and then of course, people don't realize that, you know, maybe on a Wednesday is probably your busiest day when everybody's entering for Saturday, and there's changes, there's supplements, and there's races on the, you know, extras that are being considered, and there might be changes. I mean, it is gotta be a juggling act.
It is. I mean, you know, like with entries and stuff, I mean, I just like to make my own entries. So I like to get a feel for, you know, if the race is going to go, and just kind of get a rundown when I do make my entry. So I always feel pretty comfortable. Like if I'm entering a horse at 10 o'clock and I'm the only horse in there, I mean, I can kind of go ahead and write that race off as it's not going. And guess what? We start making another plan. Maybe have to look at another, we may have to look at another track, you know, ship that horse somewhere else just because we're not getting in the spot we need to be in. So, that has a lot to do with me making my entries. It kind of keeps my mind, a little more in tune to, you know, if we need to call an audible or go somewhere else, as opposed to someone else doing it, not knowing the count or how many were in the race or whatever. So it just kind of keeps you in tune to what's going on and what type of races are going or overfilling. You know, and then that's, you know, not only do races not go, you may get excluded. You may not have a great date. You know, if you enter and there's 15 in there, you may request, say, hey, what's my date? I want to know if I'm going to get in. Do I have a good date? Yeah, I'm going to get in or whatever. So, you know, I think with being able to make the entries like that, it just gives me a good feel on, you know, if the horse is going to get in. And if not, I can make immediate a call on, you know, hey, this horse in Kentucky is not going to get in. Race is going in New York, and you look back, and that race in New York may have went the last three times in the book with a short field. Well, chances are you're going to get in somewhat of a shorter field. So it just kind of gives you a line on, you know, when you can get in, and you know, if you need, like I said, you need to make call an audible and go to a different track.
Well, different tracks, it's going to get at least a little bit more narrowed as Churchill wraps up yesterday, and you've already got the beachhead set up at Fairgrounds and are up and running. And meanwhile, in New York, of course, things continue. Let's start there, actually, with Plainsman's win before we talk about Leah Frick, because that was a bit of a chess match, and feels like Plainsman moving in a positive direction, and there's maybe some more upside yet.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. He kind of seems like he's found, you know, he likes the added ground, the mile, and the eighth. He handled it really well on Saturday. Joel did a great job, you know, kind of taking control of the race, I guess, establishing position. And it was kind of an odd run race, the way they kind of gathered up at the 5/8 pole and then kind of run at him. And then they're four abreast, and then some of the other ones just kind of took back off him. But he ran really well. He's a nice horse, very, very nice horse. Picked this horse up. Wilby Van Meter had him, did a great job with him, and Mr. John Ed Anthony wanted him in New York, and we had the division there, so it's worked out, and he's responded well up in New York, and Joel has done a good job with him, and he's a nice horse. Hopefully he can be a factor in the handicap division 2019.
And he's been hardy, too. This was his 11th start of the year.
Yeah, and back in 3 weeks, I believe it was back in 3 weeks, after, I believe he won Breeders' Cup Day at Aqueduct, and then that was my concern with it, you know, back in 3 weeks, and he's been heavily raced, but like you said, he's a hardy horse. He takes training, he takes racing, and hopefully he'll, you know, develop into, you know, an even better horse next year.
Well, certainly one sign of that is that he's a flatter, and we see these flatters get better at four and even five, etc., as they mature. And so for him to have this kind of a campaign, you know, he's earned 300,000, 11 starts, bodes well going forward for Plainsman. And John Ed, as you mentioned, running under short leaf these days. Let's talk also in New York about a hidden performance that people may have missed in the Comley. And I thought Remedy, given the circumstance and having to go and get to Blamed, that was a very good second and bodes real well for her going forward.
Yeah, this is a filly that's really come alive this year. As the second half of the year, especially, we had her up at Indiana, and she was running really well, and she put in a big race, shipped over to Oklahoma, put in a big effort. We kind of thought about the Zia Park Oaks with her, and then Comley, and she we obviously went to the Comley, but yeah, not really what we expected as far as the trip goes. It was not a good trip at all. Broke extremely poor, and just I almost thought Javier was going to come off for a second, but she rallied and made a good, you know, really nice run down the lane. And you could tell at the half mile post she was starting to pick up, and she ran big, really no pace to run at. And I think she's a filly that could be a factor in graded stakes without a doubt next year, as she's been her last two starts graded stake play. She has a big pedigree too. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but she's got a huge second dam. I want to say it's Leslie's Lady or something, but she's got a really, really big page. So that graded black type has helped her value tremendously.
Well, if it's Leslie's Lady, that means her dam's a sister of Beholder.
Yeah, I believe that's the case, and Into Mischief and a bunch of good ones. So a big page there, and she's a pretty filly, and hopefully she'll be another one that can improve next year.
Well, and Randy Gillette and the Twin Creeks team, and she's run into some tigers, too. I mean, she hit, you mentioned Remington, where she had to run behind She's a Julie, and this was going out to get Blamed and reach her in space. I thought that was a very good effort. Let's turn our attention to Churchill and Leofric and Bravazo, and they put on a terrific show down the stretch, and here is the grade one for Leofric. And as I sent out on Twitter, your seventh grade one of the year, so you made up for lost time, because I won't say running joke, but it hung over every conversation year after year, that elusive grade one, and they haven't proven that elusive this year.
You know, it's been a great year, and that horse was, you know, for him to get a grade one was just, it was amazing. I mean, that horse has come a long way. He's battled some feet issues, and he's a very, very nice horse. But there's times where he's forced us to, you know, give him a break, and we've given him the time he needs to recover from the races. And for him to get a grade one was amazing. He's accomplished. You know, we've had him a long time. We've had him 2 years, and I mean, if you had told me a year ago this horse was going to win a grade one, I mean, it's just hard to see, and for him to really just turn it on this summer and this fall, and you know, we had a lot of confidence with him going into Friday night, the way of training, and the Fayette as well. He's really doing well out of the Woodward when he was third in the Woodward. You know, it was a really tough race on him, but. And we give him plenty of time to recover, and he really responded well, and we thought he was set up for the big effort in the Fayette. And then I was thinking to myself, you know, maybe just, you know, see how he trains coming out of this, and, you know, look at the Clark, but we just going to let him tell us if he's ready to do it. And he was. He really was. He was training great, and he showed up and ran a huge race. And for him to win a grade one was huge for Steve Landers, which has been with me for, I guess, right at 4 years. And it's been a good run, and this horse has really, really been special.
Well, he's a five-year-old, of course, and by Candy Ride, and out of the Unbridled Song Mare, Lady Godiva. This was a horse that originally was bred by Peter Blum, And, you know, you look at Candy Ride out of an Unbridled Song, Mare. He certainly has got a stallion pedigree. He'd already had the West Virginia Governor's Grade 3 win under his belt and the Fayette, as you mentioned. So now he's won a Grade 1, a Grade 2, and a Grade 3. So this was really important long-term to his potential to make a stallion deal. And it seems, and given Candy Ride status, it seems obvious that he'll be a stallion somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully a couple people have called about him, and hopefully something will get done in the near future. But he's definitely earned the right to be a stallion for sure.
What I guess you could really consider a lot of fun things here going forward toward the beginning of the year. And, the obvious question that gets brought out immediately under these circumstances is he a Pegasus candidate?
Yeah, I'd say he's a candidate. We'll keep him in training, and we'll try to, I would think right now just it would either land in the Pegasus or the Razorback at Oakland. One of those two. We can't do both. They're too close together. But one of those two races, is what we'll point for moving forward. And he did come out of the race extremely good, so we'll keep pressing on with him and see what happens.
Excellent. Well, after that, of course, the other, I guess, spots we could talk about. Cool Beans, a nice third in the Mrs. Revere, ran okay. Any thoughts about the rest of the weekend?
She ran a huge race. Very proud of her. She said that was she's got a big pedigree as well, and another Candy Ride. I have a greater stake winning mare. That was getting a Grade 2 placing for her, so that was huge after her Grade 3 leaving the Valley View at Keeneland. So, that increased her value, and she's a big, pretty filly that'll hopefully go on to make big, pretty babies someday. But she'll race again next year, and we may start her one more time in December at some point, possibly at the Fairgrounds. We'll just kind of see how things move forward over the next week, but she's doing well, and I think she's a filly that should have a great stake win in her at some point. It's kind of find the right distance for her, but she's a nice filly. We also had a filly that won last night. I think she's got a big future too in the Mischief Filly for Judmont. Cosmic Code won on the dirt. I think she's dual surface. I think she'll run dirt or turf. Really nice filly in the Mischief that could be a good 3-year-old filly for us.
Now, she's out of a Tappet mare and kind of a moderate rated race. Got a 66 buyer yesterday in that nightcap to close out the meet. And speaking of the meet closing out, of course, we should throw in that Steve Asmussen and Dallas Stewart ended up tied for the training title and Steve Asmussen winning training titles. One thing for Dallas, it's a mammoth title because he doesn't have as many horses, and he had a phenomenal meet. I mean, you certainly did as well. Tyler Gaffalione followed up his Keeneland with a Churchill riding title as well. And Ron Paolucci, congratulations to Luch on an owner's title, which is Ron will certainly certainly fills the entry box, and nice to get rewarded with those kinds of titles. Let's look ahead and just maybe touch on a maiden or two. You're already set for Fairgrounds this week. Of course, they get out in front of things. And how many horses will stay around Kentucky, and how many will go to Fairgrounds / Oaklawn and so forth?
We'll probably have around 50 at the Fairgrounds and 40 at Oaklawn, and we'll keep some in Kentucky probably through the first week or two of December, and then we'll pretty much be out of Kentucky by mid December. The track's open here to December 31st to Churchill, but we'll probably evacuate by mid December with everything and head south. So looking to get rolling down south and get ready for Oaklawn late January, and things are rolling at the Fairgrounds, and just keep it going.
Well, I haven't carefully watched the weather, but it seems I haven't heard about races coming off much in terms of turf. And looking ahead this week on Thursday, you've got an interest in the 6th and in the 8th. Let's touch on those two maidens, give everybody a glance ahead, and kind of scrolling through here. You got Bronco Sally making a second start. This filly, congrats, filly. She is for Calumet, and she debuted at Indiana and seemed to show some interest late. And you're going to move her over to the grass and stretch her out in here.
Yeah, I think the distance is the biggest thing. I think that at ground to help her. We thought they wanted more ground from having her in training, and she ran well. She ran really well first time. Closed well at Indiana, and I think she'll like the added ground.
And then in the 8th, what are we looking at? We've got Lamari and Trick.
Yeah, two maidens. That Lamari was second here at Churchill last time in a big race. I think she'll improve. That was the first race in nearly a year. She was in California for one start. So I think she should really move forward off that one race at Churchill. And Trick, she actually ran well past some horses in Indiana in her first start. We're putting blinkers on her, hopefully sharpen her up. She broke pretty slow first time. Big filly that was expensive and is a big, pretty filly. Hopefully she can get out of the gate and get a little more involved early on, and she should be a factor at the end.
Lamari has got Florent Giroux back aboard. He was on her over the soft going at the beginning of November. That's a Don Alberto. And LNJ Foxwoods owns Trick, the Shanghai Bobby filly. Joe Bravo aboard. And Joe with a nice stake win out in California. And now back, and of course, he's riding, he came last year to New Orleans for Mike Stidham, and you're taking advantage. You rode him to some real success, actually. You got the pretty garish record when you put Joe Bravo on.
Yeah, no, he's a very good rider. Dirt, turf, doesn't matter. Very good judge of pace, and we've had a lot of luck with him. Actually rode a couple winners for us a couple years ago at Louisiana Downs, shipped him for some stakes, and he just happened to be there, and we needed a rider in a couple spots, and it worked out really well, so. We're always excited when Joe's in the saddle. We got a good shot. He's like I say, he's a very good judge of pace. He's very top rider.
Well, and you bring him, you put him on somebody from off coming from off the pace on the grass, and he does a terrific job that way. Let me ask you about one more second time starter. This goes all the way into December on Saturday at the Fairgrounds. Shining Knight. Here's a beautifully bred Judmont runner, Into Mischief, out of the AP Indy mare, and makes a second start. This is on Saturday.
Yeah, he's a gelding. He was gelding when he came to us. He's very nice Into Mischief that he's going to be a better horse going long. Just want to give him one more start going short. He mentally it's taking him a lot of fear things out, but there's some talent there, and I think he's without a doubt going to be better going around two turns. But he drew well. He drew to the outside. I think he's a horse that's probably not super early or super fast. They'll probably run away from him a little bit, just like they did in his first start, and they'll make up some ground, and hopefully he can run him down. But he's a horse, I think, moving forward, is definitely going to be better going two turns. And he's a nice gelding that hopefully will make a good showing on Saturday.
Eighth race Saturday at Fairgrounds, and Sean Bridgemo aboard for Judmont and Brad Cox. Brad, certainly an eventful 10 days plus, Mr. Misunderstood and Leah Frick and more, a 1,000th career win, working on the next 1,000 and continued success. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and as always, appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Steve. Look forward to talking to you soon. Thank you.
Absolutely. Brad Cox, everybody, and really, what a great year. 7 grade ones. And I think there's no reason really that Brad Cox will not be, you would have to think that the three finalists for the Eclipse on the trainer side, Chad Brown, Bob Baffert, and Brad Cox, got to be your three finalists. Let's take a break here, come back, and Johnny D. We will get his eventful. I started the show saying eventful weekend. It was eventful for Johnny. He had like half a dozen social obligations. He had weddings. He had bar mitzvahs. He had christenings. There was a bris. There was, I don't know, you name it. I think there was a boat. I think there was a boat launching. The Johnny had to swing the champagne bottle, maybe. I don't know. XB Johnny D joins us next at The Races.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.